Good evening, you're listening to Tales of Valor and Sorcery. My name is Eric Jensen, I'll be your host tonight. I had intended to record a short bit about con games in the aftermath of Hopsapalooza, just sort of dealing with my hints and tips or whatever. And because I recorded it in the car on the way home, it turned into like a 30-minute opus. So that's going to be the focus of this episode, is chatting about con games. But first up, a little nugget from our friend Rich Frazier that was so nicely praiseworthy that I listened to it several times this week. That's one of the beauties of being a member of a community, is that you can re-listen to the uplifting call-ins. That said, I'm happy to take call-ins, questions, suggestions, anything from anybody. We'll reach out and let me know what we should be talking about.
Hey Eric, it's Rich from Cockatrice Nuggets. 3D6 item quality? Oh my god, you blew my mind. That is so amazing. That's very clever and not dumb at all. If I can remember it, I'm stealing it. I gotta write this down somewhere. Such a good idea. So many times my players are like, well, can we take these goblin swords? No, don't take the damn goblin swords. Or, hey, we found the suit of plate mail. What's it look like? How good a shape it's in? 3D6 item quality. You, and the fact that you used all the dice separately, and then you add all them together to get an attribute, and you figured out how to add pricing into that. Oh my god, you just saved me, I don't know, tons of work. I love it. Give me some more clever ideas so I can steal them. Have a good one. Talk to you soon.
Well, if I'm recording in the commute on the way home and I sound sick, then obviously it must be an Anchorcast day. I hope my voice holds up for this segment. If not, I'll have to do it a couple times. It's getting a little scratchy. We've been sick around the house lately, and I kind of feel like I sound like a Frank Miller drawing looks, which is kind of badass, but not conducive to actual talking. So today I want to talk about con games, by which I don't mean bait and switch on your players. I mean convention sessions, where you're looking at a limited time frame playing with strangers, which sounds like more dangerous and enticing than it actually is. Con games are not your regular game. It's important that you understand that whether you're a player or a first-time con GM. I've run lots of con games. I've played lots of con games. Some of them were good. Some of them were just buckets of ass. And everything in between. And so I hope that, moving forward, as I talk about some of the things I've learned, or the things maybe you ought not do, that no one takes anything personally. If you've made these mistakes yourself, I've made them too, sometimes multiple times before they finally sunk in. So the first issue with con games that you need to be aware of if you're running a con game is, this is not your regular game. Okay, you're playing with people you don't normally play with, who may not be familiar with the rules, probably aren't familiar with whatever setting or house rule stuff you do, and you're doing it within a particular time frame. Now, there are people who can manage to pull off, hey, this is a con version of my home game. Those people manage to do it. That's great. If you are a first-time con-running DM, please do not attempt this. I want you to go into the con understanding that you are providing a nugget of goodness, 4 hours or 3 hours, 3 hours and change, 5 hours, whatever, of amazing content that you are sure you can pull off with a table full of strangers, whether you get your maximum number of people or whether you get your minimum number of people. You need to be flexible enough. Wow, my voice is cracking like on the Brady Bunch. That's awesome. You need to be flexible enough to accommodate both of those occurrences, because it'll happen. You'll have games that fill up or overfill. You'll have games where almost nobody shows up. And when you move into this, you need to have an understanding of what your parameters are. You need to say to yourself, all right, I advertised for 6. I'll run for 8. I'll be ready to run for 8. Or I advertised for 6. I'll run for 3, but if it's only 2, then I'll cut bait at quarter after and let those people go. Right? Or whatever. Some people are fine being gung-ho and saying, screw it, I'll run for 10, I'll run for 1. Other times you will have set up your con session in such a way that you can't do it. You can't be all that flexible. So, your con game is not your regular game. The second thing is, and this is maybe the most important thing, is pre-gens. You must have pre-gens. You need to have them available. Unless you're playing a system that allows you to generate a character, and I mean a complete character, in 5 minutes or less, it's got to be pre-gens. because you want people to be able to hit the table running. And those pre-gens have to be fully genned, okay? Don't bring people to your table, let them screw around for 10 minutes, point to a bucket of bicycle parts and tell them to get ready to race. You need to have those bicycles up on top of the hill pointing downward. From the moment you say go, the game has to be on. Because you're going to lose 15 minutes or 20 minutes at the beginning of the session, unless you're a real table commander, with people straggling in or figuring what they're doing on, or hang on, I got to go get a drink, whatever. People get lost, they show up late, be ready for that. Your pre-gens need to be tuned to the game you're going to run. They need to either be part and parcel of the adventure session you're running, like they are invested, they have character traits and drives that are on their sheets that people can run with, or they need to be trope-tastic examples of the kind of adventure you're running, so that people can easily pick them up and run with them. Players are naturally independent. The people that want to change things on their sheet or change their character's motivation are going to do that whether you ask them to or not. What you can't do is give them the crippleware of an incomplete sheet. Okay? Make sure that whatever system you're running, especially if it's more complex, the sheet has to be done. Everything has to be calculated out for them. Don't make them do the math. Don't make them buy equipment. If you want to say to them, hey, you have the equipment on your sheet, if there's one or two mundane things you want to add that you think I've overlooked, feel free to write them down. Good, do that. Don't let them buy equipment from the list in the book. You're going to lose 20 minutes at best. If you're going to give them pre-selected equipment lists to choose from, explorer packs or whatever, I strongly suggest you print those out as handouts. Say, here are the three or four packs you can choose from. Grab one. Let them grab one. Don't let them waste their time and yours transcribing 50 feet of hemp and rope from your sheet onto their character sheet. Do that work for them. Okay? You need to do everything you can to get that game running on time. And the reason you want to start early and start strong is because your time is limited and your time is valuable. So it comes down to pacing. If you have a 4-hour con slot, go into it understanding you're going to lose 15 or 20 minutes at the top and probably 10 minutes in the middle for a bio break. Okay? So right there, you're gone half an hour. Your 4-hour game just became a 3.5-hour game. So if you're playing a 4-hour game, don't plot out 4 hours worth of content. You're going to plot out 3.25 hours worth of content, and then maybe another 30 minutes of flex content. What do I mean by that? If you're going to pace your adventure, you're not setting up a railroad. Some people hear pacing and they think that means linear. That's not what I'm trying to say. It's very easy to go through and tell yourself, here's how the adventure's going to run, and this segment will take this long, and this segment will take this long, and then we'll do this, and then we'll do that, A, B, C, D. I think that's a mistake. Every time you set up an adventure, particularly a con adventure, to be that linear, first, your players are going to see the rails. And while con players are forgiving of a certain amount of rails, I think it's far more impressive to at least obscure the rails or get rid of them entirely. And the second thing is, if you tell yourself this segment should take 15 minutes, well, what happens if it doesn't? I'd rather you be prepared for what happens if it runs short or what happens if it runs long than invest the time figuring out exactly what 15 minutes of content is. Pacing means being ready to cut stuff, knowing what can be cut. Pacing means being ready to add stuff and knowing where to add it to do the padding. Because you can't do all your padding at the beginning and you can't do all your padding at the end. You have to be able to put little pads in between, like your spine. You have the little discs between your spine that make it all work. So rather than linear, where you're going to have one beginning, two middle segments, and an end or whatever, you need to have one beginning, multiple middle potential parts, right, that can happen possibly in multiple orders, and then you need to be ready for multiple endings. You need to have the win ending, you need to have the fail ending, and be ready for stuff in between. You have to be ready to improvise. People show up to a con game expecting to take this roller coaster ride through an experience, right? And that implies rails. But they also want to feel that the ups and downs are real and that the choices they make at the table matter, right? They're not coming to a convention to have you tell them a story. They're coming to play a game. So when you make preparatory choices that take options away from the players, you need to make sure you're doing it for a good reason and that you're not doing it that often. So prepare to pace yourself. Be ready to improvise. Be ready to bring people back on track. And if you're willing to do so, be ready to go completely off track. I've been in plenty of con games that halfway through turned into absolute craziness and had nothing to do with what the original session was supposed to be about, but they ended up being better because it was a tighter session. Everybody was firing on all their cylinders. We had a great time. Now, by way of example, if those are my big principles, right? Be aware it's not your home campaign. Do pre-gens mindfully and be ready for constant looking at pacing as you start and as you go forward. Then I need to use, by example, some rough con games I've been in, good con games I've been in, games I've run, stuff like that. So I have two similar, parallel examples of bad con games I've been in, and they were 20 years apart. So in probably 1993, I went to Balticon. This is when I was in college. Balticon is a science fiction convention, mostly literary sci-fi convention. At the time, there was sort of a burgeoning anime scene. This is pretty early, actually, for the anime scene in this region. But anyway, so we go to this con, and we're like, oh, there's the RPG room. Sweet, let's go over there. So my buddy Dave and I go, and we're looking for some D&D or something familiar, Star Wars, whatever. This is the early heyday. We probably would have even played Vampire if it was available. So this guy calls us over and recruits us to sit down and play at his table. So the two of us sit down, and we're looking at his game, and it was his game, right? So this is this guy's Heartbreaker. 1993, this thing is printed out. It's easily 200 pages, printed out on his dot matrix printer. You can imagine. Thankfully, it was not still folded. He had it, you know, with binder clips or whatever. So he's got one copy of this game that he brought with him that he wants to play test or whatever, and he's inviting people to play. So, like a couple of fools, Dave and I sit down. And I say like a couple of fools because we're about to be in for some serious pain. And we were too nice or too dumb to get up and leave. And let me pre-admonish you on this. If you sit down at a con game and you know early on it's going to be bad, get out. I know you want to seem nice, and I know you want to be courteous. You can be nice and courteous and still leave. 4 hours is a long time to be in pain. And your time is more valuable than that. You're better off wandering to the other side of the room and getting in a two-hour pickup game with people that aren't causing you pain. So please, please do that. So we sit down to play this guy's Heartbreaker, and I don't remember what it was called, but you can imagine. It was a combination of two nouns as one word, right? Iron Forge, Soul Mace, Cosmic, I don't know what it was. So we're trying to play this game, and he says, all right, first let me show you how to make a character. That's red flag number one. Dude had no pre-gens, right? We know now, after years of experience, that if you're going to play test somebody's new game, they need to have pre-gens there. Pre-gens that show not only the setting, but the genre assumptions and the mechanics of the game and teach you. Ideally laminated, right? So we sit down to make our characters, and because we don't want to waste a lot of time, Dave and I both make dwarves, right? That way we can keep the same page of the one copy of the rules open while we're making our characters. This takes about 20 minutes. And we were trying to go fast, we really were. But he had to stop to explain things and then keep flipping around to different sections because stuff wasn't in the order you'd think it would be for character creation. All these lessons that you would think we would have learned by the early 90s and yet hadn't. And that game got worse because as soon as Dave and I thought we were ready to play, a third player sat down. He was 9. Now, I don't have a problem playing with children. I play with children all the time. I play with my own kids. I play with other people's kids. I'll rephrase that. I play role-playing games with young people all the time. Okay, but this kid was obnoxious. He was not accompanied by a parent. He was a hyperactive caricature of a snot nose. I mean, like he had like so much pixie stick dust on the corners of his mouth. He looked like an early version of the Heath Ledger Joker, right? And this kid's like, I want to play. I want to be an elf. So of course, pixie stick needs to play an elf, and it's a whole different section of the rules. So we lost another 15 minutes there. Anyway, that game was awful. I can't tell you what happened in that game. Other than Dave and I stayed to the end and were really mad at ourselves. That was one of those situations where, as we're leaving, we're looking at each other like, well, I thought you wanted to stay. Well, I thought you wanted to stay. Well, shit. I guess we should have communicated better. And from there on out, I think we had a high sign. So that was bad. you would think that I would have learned my lesson. But 20-odd years later, there I am at Gen Con, and I sign up for a game using a non-D&D, old-school, you know, vintage system. I thought, okay, I'm not doing anything this slot. Maybe I'll learn this system. It was Dragon Quest. So I sit down at the table, and there's a couple problems. Red flags immediately that, like a fool, I ignored. First, he had no pre-gens. He wanted us to make characters at the table. Two, he was running a published adventure, which is fine, but at no point did he make overtures to the idea that he was running a selection from it. He intended to start from the beginning, and that was a problem later. So there's like six of us sitting down at the table, and it rapidly becomes apparent as we're creating our characters, which took forever, that two of us have never played the game before and we're looking to sample it because we're OSR types and we want to try this game, right? The other four people who sit down at the game play the game regularly at home. Now, these are like hardcore vintage dudes who love Dragon Quest and know about Chris and Fords. So they sit down, they start ginning up characters. Now, you would think that their skill and experience with the game would mean that they would create characters quickly. Oh, nay, nay. They took forever. They took longer than me and the other new guy because they asked what some people would term good questions, right? The other new guy and I asked dumb questions like, with this stat, can I use a spear, right? These other guys, the hardcore Dragon Quest grogs, they knew to ask things like, well, if I'm a half-mage, slapdash, fatback, psychic, razorback, does that mean I get 30 points of whoop-de-doo? I mean, these are questions that only hardcore people would be able to ask, let alone answer. So that took forever. It was almost 2 hours making characters. I wish I were kidding. We spent half the session making characters. Then the adventure began, by which I mean the adventure began. Page one, right? This is like a 30-page old-school adventure. And it starts with like a page and a half of box text about this quest we're all going to go on. And do we accept the quest? And will we do what the king asks? F it, dude. Start after that. Start with, the king has sent you, right? Think about Ghost Tower of Inverness and other tournament adventures that say, you are at the place because you must be. Never play through that prelim stuff at a con game. Oh my God. So because we start at the beginning, we accept the quest from the king, and he says, very good. Here is your allowance for provisions. I'm sorry, what? Your allowance for provisions. So then we spend the next hour, I wish I were lying, we spend the next hour, hour three of this Dragon Quest game, spending money on provisions, food, rope, mules, carts. Well, who has the cart driving skill? I do. You don't. Let's figure this out. How many mules can we get? Well, let's upgrade the mules to ponies. Well, no way. Mules, blah, blah, blah. Two of the grogs have a 10-minute conversation about the optimal setup for a multi-mule cart. I swear to God, the multi-mule cart argument. So, finally, this is all done. I wish I were dead. I wish I were dead. I want to leave. I want to go back to my hotel room and drink expensive mini bar bullshit. But I didn't. I stayed. I'm like, okay, there's only an hour left. And the other new guy and I, who did not know each other and probably should have commiserated afterward, are exchanging looks across the table like, oh my God, can we throw Mama from the train each other? Is that allowed? So finally, the fourth hour was the first combat. We get our multi-mule team out on the road, and we were attacked by, I don't know, hobgoblins or something. So we spend this hour dealing with the hex map, because it's got battle hexes rather than a grid, and learning the combat, and it took an hour for the six of us to defend our mule train from these dozen hobgoblins or whatever. And it's so bad, like, towards the end of it, I'm just charging. I'm, like, leaping my dude into ravines trying to hack at hobgoblins, because I want my character to die. Like, not in a way that I'm trying to be disruptive, but we've got 20 minutes left, right? So screw it, it's a con game. You see the same thing at the end of a DCC con game where everybody's trying to blow all their luck and spell burn all their stats because who cares, it's a con game, right? Well, in this case, I wanted my little dwarf guy, or whoever he was, I don't even remember, I wanted him dead because then I could excuse myself from the table with honor. As it turned out, that's 4 hours of my life I'll never get back. Please don't do that. That's why I'm so adamant about pre-gens. The other thing is scope. I should have mentioned this earlier. The scope of the adventure. This isn't your home game where you can have, you know, 200 hours of content sort of figured out in your brain and then sit down and we play four of it. It doesn't work that way. I want your best 4 hours of content. If you're going to play a published adventure, unless it's meant for a four-hour run or can be trimmed to that, you can't play the whole thing. You're going to have to pick representative sections. And nobody playing a con game is going to mind, right? If you say, we're starting here, we're going to do this bit, all right, we're going to pause, we're going to go on pee break, and when we come back, we'll jump ahead a week, and you're at this other place. No one cares. It's totally fine. Everybody would rather you do that than spend an hour outfitting your mule train. I have had some good con games. I've played in a number of good con games where people were engaged. That's what it takes. You want the GM to be engaged. You want the majority of the players to be engaged in an infectious way so that everybody's contributing positive energy to the table. If you get one or two lumps at the table, you're going to have a hard time. Doubly so if one of those lumps is the GM. But that happens. So, just to close up, let me talk about some of my con games that I thought were semi-successful and why I thought they might be semi-successful. One con game I'm thinking of that I ran at North Texas, man, talk about adversity. My life is so hard. So I had 6 people signed up. This was for a Sunday slot, which I thought was pretty boss. I had 6 people signed up for a Sunday. Get to run the game, 3 people show up. I had lost 4 and added 1, so we had 3 people. They each played 2 of the pre-gens. These were complete pre-gens. They didn't need to add anything to the sheet except names. And we had a pretty good time. I had kind of hoped we'd get more people involved as the game went on. I was ready. You know, I briefed all my players and said, look, if more people show up, be ready to shed your second favorite PC, right? So more people can play, and everybody was down with that, right? I thought we'd get more people because, you know, the table was covered with plastic dinosaurs. But that's the sort of thing that attracts walk-by attention, but not necessarily sit-down attention, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's because it was Sunday morning. Sunday morning slots are hard. I thought that was a pretty good game because everybody was engaged. So I was pleased with that one. Other games I was pleased with, I like to try and do a gimmick to make a game memorable so that even if, and this is a total cheat, right? Even if people didn't love the game, even if the game itself was B-, they remember something positive walking away. And maybe that's easier for me because I tend to run kind of light games, humorous games. So I ran one game at Trident Con where everybody was a dwarf. This is a DCC game. Everybody was dwarves. And we did 2 things to make that light. One was that because they were all dwarven prisoners, they were in a dwarven prison, I had a deck of index cards with their crime. And everybody pulled one. And they had to sort of say, this is my crime, and here's what happened. Like, they told the real story, right? I'm innocent. Or, you know, how they came about to be arrested for that thing. That was pretty cool. Because it got personality traits out, and everybody was able to be kind of silly within the first 10 minutes of the game, and that broke the ice. I strongly recommend index cards. If you're going to hand out random magic items to people, like if you say, hey, everybody's going to be this level and get a random magic item, I'd suggest you do it with index cards, because then you can actually control what you're handing out. If you're going to do it with a random table, do it from a random table you have created, okay? Because that way you're not looking at a table in a book and saying, ooh, I didn't like that result, or we already have one of those in the party, or, you know, that's an okay item, but it's not really going to be super useful in this game. Like, I understand the temptation to do that, but you're wasting time. Go ahead and do it on index cards, let everybody pick. That way there's no duplicates unless you want there to be duplicates. And everybody can have the thing right there. They don't even have to write it down. You can put the description on the other side, whatever you want to do. Or if they trade them back and forth, they can just hand the item cards around. There's something nice about the tactile nature of handing an item card to somebody. That may be the only positive thing I learned from LARP. Anyway, that session was good because of those and because of the beards. Because everybody was playing dwarves and we wanted to be silly, I brought a bunch of craft foam and scissors and string and stuff and glue. And I gave everybody the supplies and the instructions on how to make their own beards. So during the first half hour, as we were doing introductions and some of the expository stuff, everybody made beards. And then we sat them on the nearby table to dry. And by the time we had finished the game, the beards were dry, and we could all put on our dwarf beards and take a big picture. I thought that was pretty cool, because then everybody's walking away with 2 things. One, the knowledge that they did this silly shit at a con. And 2, they've got their beard. So they're walking around the rest of the day, and if people say, what the heck are you carrying? Then they get to say, well, this is my beard. I just played in this old dwarf game, blah, blah, blah. So there, we're building memories, right? We're trying to get crap into people's hands to get them to talk about your game. Not just in a marketing way, but we want them to have a souvenir to help them remember a good time. That's why some con GMs give out pencils or dice or whatever, right? Or prizes. Another decent con game I ran that didn't work the way I wanted it to, gimmick-wise, was at a game day called Legacies in Philly that was run by the Stormlord guys. I was running Marvel Superheroes, and I had a Saturday morning slot. So thinking about this, I thought, man, superheroes, Saturday morning cartoons. I mean, I'm of an age where Saturday morning cartoons have some meaning to me, right? So I thought, okay, let's lean into this. And so we did the Marvel Superheroes game as though it were an episode of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, right? We had the theme song. We used those sort of, in-genre assumptions, those characters or whatever. And I brought a bunch of sugary cereal with bowls and spoons and milk so we could all sit around and eat the crappy cereal we weren't allowed to eat when we were kids while we're doing Saturday morning cartoons. I thought this was brilliant. I was wrong. You see, people tend to roll into a con having already eaten, or they bring their food with them. No one rolled in Saturday morning expecting to eat with me at their morning session. So everybody kind of demurred, and they're all sitting around, and we're playing, and I'm like trying to encourage people. I'm pouring a bowl of cereal or whatever as we're half an hour in. And it turned out, instead of being a bunch of people laughing around a table playing superheroes and eating sugary cereal, it was a bunch of people laughing around a table playing superheroes and one weird dude, that'd be me, eating cereal. I don't know what that looked like to passersby. Like, dude, that guy's eating cereal. Okay, whatever. So sometimes a gimmick is brilliant in concept, maybe, but suffers in execution. But I guarantee that those people remembered that game, right? Not only was there the dumb cereal stuff and the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends stuff, but I was running Ghost Tower of Inverness with Marvel Superheroes, which is something worth talking about anyway. I knew that would get talked about even if I failed, right? Because it's either going to be, oh, this was this fun game that I played, or, man, I can't believe that guy tried that. Either way, you know, there's no such thing as bad press. All right, so I haven't run any con games in a little while because I've taken some time off from TridentCon, but I hope to in the future. I like the constraints of the format. You learn things by putting those constraints on you, the same way you would as a writer, having constraints and parameters that bind you. The time slot is hard. The strangers is difficult. But it's totally worth it. The other piece of advice I would give, and I think that other people who run a lot of con games might support this, is that if you run the same thing multiple times, it's actually worth it. I'm not saying you need to do it every time, but if you run the same session, essentially, a couple times, it's not going to go the same twice. You will have minor variances, you will have major variances, and you will learn things, not just about the adventure, but you'll learn things about your own DM style, and you'll learn things about the way players work, because different groups of players are not going to do things the same way. When I went to UConn a couple years ago, I ran a bunch of D&D Adventurers League first level stuff, which was great because it was some experienced people, but a lot of newbies, right? I had some kids playing some sessions, stuff like that. And I ran the same, like, two or three adventures, like, two or three times each of them. They were pretty different. But what's interesting is that you find that your confidence builds. The things you feel you can get away with. You know what you can cut. You know what you should add. And you know when you have space to do silly voices and more NPC interaction, or when you should hustle and get to the next encounter. So, like with any other aspect of this game mastering thing that we do, look for mastery. Repetition breeds mastery. Don't do too much, because it can also breed boredom. But if you want to get good at running con games, you got to get in there and do it. It's a completely different, well, not completely different, it's a very different kind of GMing that maybe requires, if not different skills than your home game, it requires a different mix of those same skills. And I strongly encourage you to give it a shot. You don't know what you can do until you're put under pressure, the time constraint, and see what you can actually come up with as a con game. Best of luck.